Blog Talk Radio.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light.
What do you know?
So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
What you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
Bought a hot shot bed from an old Van Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the pool and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And a hip with the ass cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
What you know about the waves on the underside?
What do you know?
A hot shot cat from a North Bay Guinea.
What do you know?
Ain't it up with your ass cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Dropping bombs from above cause you're all damn skies.
What do you know?
Yeah, the streets rose in two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
What a hot shot cat from a North Bay Guinea.
Probably take you off mute. Darby!
Hey.
How are you? Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Good. I decided to try to use the Skype feature on Blog Talk Radio this evening because, their shitty little direct connect thing has not been working. Hello and welcome to Logicast. Logicast is a weekly podcast that airs every Thursday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. We discuss everything from politics to religion to philosophy, science, skepticism, history, economics. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Logicast. Receive weekly updates. Follow us on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/Logicast. Tonight's show is going to be focused on suicide, scripture, and victim blaming. We'll be talking about societal views of suicide, including the history behind Christianity's view of suicide, how suicide is seen from the perspective of Western culture, and why many people oversimplify the causes and ramifications of suicide, and how victim blaming can actually, or does actually, in some instances, lead to more suicides. To preface this, if you or someone you know suffers from suicidal thoughts, intentions, please know that help is available. You can contact the National Suicide Prevention Line at 1-800-273-8255. Tonight's show is dedicated to my friend Scott Sullivan, who unfortunately took his life this past Saturday night. So, starting off on kind of a somber sort of note, Darby, we haven't had a show in a couple weeks. That's obviously my fault. you grumbled at me whenever I told you that we couldn't do last week's show because I was still exhausted from my abrupt trip to West Texas, which was it was a nightmare. It was awful. I mean, it was probably one of the worst things that I've ever walked into in my career. So obviously, I can't.
Yeah, I don't think Jared does not mean West Texas itself. He means the situation in West Texas.
Yes. No, I got to say, because I was born in Lubbock, but I was so little, I don't remember it. But we were, and the place where this business was located was actually 30 minutes sort of west of Lubbock, Texas. And it's all flat. It's completely and totally flat out there. And as we're driving back down this highway, there was this thunderstorm and it was gorgeous. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. So, you know, and I mean, you could see it for miles. It was amazing to even begin to try to describe it. I wouldn't be doing it the proper justice. But, you know, it's sort of like watching all these lightning bolts kind of dance around on, you know, the plains, if you will. You know, I sort of got in touch with my Native American heritage for a few seconds, you know.
Cool.
It was a joke, Darp. I didn't really get in touch with that. I just thought it was really neat to see. So, how are you doing, Eric?
Lightning's sounding cool. I'm okay.
Good. That's good to hear. So, am I coming through pretty clearly? Because, I mean, this is the first time I've used Skype in a long time, so.
Sound great. You sound great.
Good. Good. Wonderful. Wonderful. So we had, it was pretty interesting that tonight's, I guess, show occurred today. So my friend committed suicide on Saturday night at about, it was between 10 and 11, and his family found out. I got text messages, from a couple of close friends, text messages and Facebook messages from a couple of close friends who, you know, were trying to clue me in and basically saying, hey, we're hearing this. Have you heard this? Can you verify it? And I really couldn't, not really at the time, but, you know, I ended up calling another friend who was very close, a lot closer to this guy Scott than I was, and he verified it. And, yeah, it was a very sobering sort of Sunday morning. And his family, you know, are phenomenal people. They had the memorial service today. They cremated him yesterday. And, you know, I got to go and hang out this afternoon, my wife and I, with his family and some other friends of his and people that I, you know, grown up with and known. I've known a lot of them for a long time and we disagree on a lot of things, but, you know, it was really cool to listen to everybody tell stories about him, you know, cause he was an interesting character. So, you know, and it's weird cause you never know, you know what I mean? Like not that you never know, but it's one of the things that it's one of the things that I've always found rather interesting is had I picked 10 people out of a lineup and thought that and said that which one out of all of these people, based on what I know about them and their personalities and their lives and the things that they're encountering and going through, out of these 10 people, had Scott been in that group, which one would be the least likely probably to ever harm themselves or, you know, to kill themselves, it would have been him. He literally would have been the last kind of person, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, interestingly enough, the phone call I had Sunday morning with this close friend of mine who verified that this happened, he made a comment about how Scott had said on a couple of occasions that he wanted to go to Belize. And nobody really understood why he said he wanted to go to Belize. And if you're a Breaking Bad fan, you understand kind of the reference, and it was sort of a reference to death, if you will, in the show. I can't verify that, obviously, that that's what he meant, but that's sort of what I suspect, because nobody wants to go to Belize. You know what I mean?
Belize? So, oh, no, a lot of people want to go to Belize. I'm one of them.
Will you shut up? You know what I meant. I mean,
cool stuff there.
Anyway, so I have a lot of stuff that I really wanted to talk about tonight, and there's other stuff that I also want to talk about. So,
all right, we'll have at it then.
Yeah, I'm just gonna kind of talk. So I get asked a lot by people, Christian friends, atheist friends, a Buddhist friend every now and then, like how do atheists, people who don't believe in an afterlife, like how do we deal with death? You know, and I mean, I always get pretty upset at that question. And I had a couple of people that asked me right after they found out that, right after Scott had committed suicide and, you know, found out that, you have to understand, me and him haven't had a relationship for a couple of years. I disagree with a lot of the things that he did. But when we were younger, and I mean, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, he was a good friend and we were very, very close. And I met him like, you know, 15 years ago, so we're both going after the same girl, but irrelevant. But anyway, you know, I guess the response that I always give people is that I deal with death the exact same way you do.
Yeah.
It's upsetting and it's not fun and it's not enjoyable to look at family members and, you know, see how much pain they're in and, you know, that they've lost someone that they had a much more intimate relationship than a friend probably ever could, at least generally. You know, I obviously don't believe that there is an afterlife. I don't believe I'll ever see Scott again. You know, it's sort of a sobering kind of reality when someone does die. You know, my philosophy on it has always been that so long as you take good pieces that people have given you of themselves and then you know, kind of pass them on down the line, then their lives weren't meaningless and they can kind of live forever, even if somewhere down the line nobody knows where it came from. The good part of them gets to continue on and hopefully can, you know, make other people happy in the interim. You know, I don't have answers.
Well, nobody does. Some people think they do. But.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when people say things like, oh, yeah, well, you know, your atoms go back into the earth, the new life is born. Like, to be honest, that kind of a statement is just meaningless to me. I mean, it's like, well, my atoms are going to do that whether I like it or not. So why should I give a shit? You know, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect my worldview one way or the other. I think that it's sort of beautiful in kind of like a natural way. You know, it's kind of the circle of life, if you will. But, you know, I don't feel any, like, I don't gain any comfort out of that. You know, I don't gain any animosity out of that. It's just, you know, that's going to happen. And that's demonstrably true. So how I feel about it is sort of irrelevant.
Right.
You know, it's just that I often wonder, how other people rationalize it and how they think about it. I mean, it's one thing to talk about death in this sort of abstract way, but, you know, when someone that you personally know, passes away and you no longer believe in an afterlife. Yeah, how do you deal with that? How do you kind of cope with that. And I guess, you know, like I said, I mean, I try to do it. I try to do it. I assume the same way other people do. The only real difference is that I don't, I guess, kind of not pretend, obviously it's not the word I'm looking for, but I don't think that I know what happens. I don't think anything happens. I don't have any reason to think that anything happens. And it's very, very difficult to tell a parent or to tell a sibling or to tell a wife or just any loved one that, no, I don't think that anything happened to them. And I think that they probably just faded off, sort of, you know, kind of like what it was like before before you were born. You know, it's, consciousness is really all we have with regard to our relationship with the world. So when that's gone, there's no reason to think that there's anything beyond that. I'm sort of rambling all over the place. I'm not trying to.
No, it's all right. I know you've got a lot of stuff you want to get to, so I'm letting you, you know,
do my thing. Yeah. It's kind of going back to that. I synthesize situations as best as I can. And, you know, I had someone at the memorial who was closer to Scott than I was kind of pull me to the side. And she goes, you know, when they were, because they read prayer, and she goes, you know, when they were reading that, I didn't believe that. Like, I don't really believe that, like in the Jesus thing, you know, and she made a comment about how, you know, Scott didn't either.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I don't believe in an afterlife and I don't believe in a God, but I would like to think that if an afterlife did exist and a God existed, then, you know, maybe people do get the opportunity to be reunited with their loved ones. That if those things are real, you know, then of course I'm going to choose the thing that is most appealing or comforting, you know, given that situation. You know, and a lot of it is trying to figure out the right way to explain something to someone to where they don't, you don't want to offend them. You know that they're hurting. You're trying the best you can to assist them in dealing with the issue. But at the same time, you want to be honest as possible. And
yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, most of the time in those situations, I find that it's best not to bring it up unless they want to talk about it, in which case I usually listen. Because after someone they love dies is not usually the best time to discuss philosophical issues, you know.
Yeah, no, but definitely nobody's in the right frame of mind for that kind of stuff. So
what can I do for you is usually what I go for there.
Yeah, I mean, I asked her what she thought, and she told me she didn't know. And, you know, I was honestly just trying to let her off the hook. Like, yeah, this is possible. Like, this is a possibility. You know, I mean, what kind of human being would I?
Sure it is.
You know, what kind of human?
Yep.
Yeah, what kind of human being would I be if I was just like, yeah, no, you know, the afterlife, I don't believe in it at all. You know, he's probably just dead and that's just it, you know. What kind of human being would I be if I did that? You know, even if it's, to be honest, like, and I've said this before, like, I don't owe being a non-believer anything. Like, the actual title, atheist, like, I don't owe that anything. You know, I mean, what I actually owe to people is, you know, to try to be a decent person, to try to be a decent human being, and, you know, to try to give them an opportunity to not feel like I'm bashing them. That's actually one of the things I learned from you. That's been one of the great things about our friendship is that I've learned how successful that kind of an approach can be. So.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. But anyway, it was really great to hear the stories, and had a couple beers, and that was a lot of fun. Talked to a couple of really good people, got to meet some really good people. I said a few words, that Scott and I became close friends over cars, and a lot of the people who were there in kind of like the local car scene, and they have those down here, by the way. They have them in every city, I'm pretty sure. I basically pointed out that a lot of those relationships wouldn't have existed without Scott. And it was one of the great things that he did for everybody was that he had a knack for getting people together. And, a lot of those bonds formed as a result of him and his contributions to that crowd and to that scene. So it was very humbling to see all those people there and how much they cared about him and loved him. And it was very nice. So one of the things that I actually kept hearing, talking to people, and I was messaging people were messaging me, and people kept calling him selfish, like such a selfish thing to do.
Ah, that's an interesting
way to
look at it. Mm-hmm.
It's such a selfish thing to do, and I'm amazed that in the year 2015, the United States of America and a lot of Western culture in general still has this really horrible victim-blaming bullshit that goes on with suicide. I mean, it's completely and totally preposterous. I mean, if you commit suicide, then it wasn't about the pain that you were feeling. It wasn't about the things that you were going through. Actually, what it's about is it's about all the other people and their feelings that should come first and should matter. It shouldn't be the person who is obviously clearly hurting, clearly going through, what I call emotional exhaustion, because in all of the studies and the documentation on suicide that I've read, I think that best sums it up, because it's not always just this completely sinking, hopeless feeling. Like sometimes people are just so emotionally exhausted when it comes to dealing with issues in their lives or dealing with stressors or dealing with other problems. I mean,
they literally can't do it anymore. There's only so much you have, so many resources you have to deal with that stuff. And especially if a lot of it doesn't go away or get better. And so it's emotionally exhausted is probably a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah. And I mean, and some of that, well, you just got to willpower through it,
Oh yeah, we've heard that about a lot of things.
Oh yeah, it's the other side of the personal responsibility coin. You just gotta try harder. You just gotta put your head down and work hard, and you'll be a fucking millionaire. For some people, being a millionaire would actually be easier than overcoming this sort of emotional exhaustion. And I wrote a post just because I was so disgusted and so angry. And, I'm sitting here going, the idea that it's selfish for someone to feel so terrible or to be so exhausted, with what's going on in their life, that they're not considering, they shouldn't consider their feelings first. And they should consider everybody else's feelings outside of that. That actually should be the reason why they don't do it. They want everyone else's feelings to be considered prior to theirs. And, to me, that is similar, not the same, and I don't mean this, I hope nobody gets offended, but it's similar to the rape victim who shouldn't have been wearing those short shorts or, drinking at a party. It's very similar to that. It's, it's analogous, if only in the sense that, the blame the blame or the totality of the blame, you know, is being put on factors where it's completely and totally irrelevant, as opposed to the factors that are actually the cause of it. And, you know,
right.
whenever you blame the factors that are the cause of it, a lot of times when you're able to understand those factors, you can actually attempt to help and counsel people through them. You know, and it just didn't happen. I mean, I had someone who, it's like I've heard this bullshit before, you know, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. I've known people who have had temporary problems for 20 years, or basically for the majority, of their adult life. For a majority of their adult life, they've had, you know, they've had a quote unquote temporary problem. So those people can fuck off too, because quite frankly, permanent solution. Yes, death is indeed a permanent solution to life. No matter what happens, you die, period. So, you know, by choosing to do that, for one, it assumes that all problems are somehow temporary. There are a lot of problems that are not temporary. There are a lot of problems that will last and be with you for the rest of your life. There are some people who have lived with problems for their entire lives. So, you know, the idea that you could just oversimplify this into some sort of a box, you know, that you can compartmentalize and say, you know what, if you just throw this box out the window, all of these other problems will go away. All of these other, you know, issues and causes will go away is preposterous, completely and totally ludicrous. Again, it's another form of, in my opinion, victim blaming, because what it does is that it says to the suicide victim, your problems are only temporary. You just need to,
bootstrap your way through
them.
Right. I know about them, even though they often don't. And I can say, and that trivializes them as well. If you just wait for a while, you're impatient. Yeah, right. It's based on what? It's not based on anything.
Right. Completely and totally subjective. You know, I mean, sort of ideas of whether something is or isn't a temporary problem. I mean, it's absurd, you know, and people that, you know, I've heard others say that, you know, that suicide victims in a lot of cases or in a lot of ways, you know, have basically told me that, well, they're just doing it, you know, for attention. That one pisses me off. And, you know, because I don't know the statistics because I don't even know if any studies have been done to determine whether or not such a thing exists. I'm sure that it's possible. The majority of people do not just fucking wake up one day and go, you know, I'm really lacking attention in my life. And what I think I need to do is kill myself or attempt to kill myself. Or make threats about killing myself. You know, it doesn't work that way. It's usually something that happens or evolves. Human beings evolve down a road where they eventually wind up to that being their option, or the option that they're not necessarily most with, but that they're most amenable to.
Or the one that seems like it's the only one there.
I didn't want to say that, but yeah, I didn't want to say it that way, but yes, you're right. I mean, the only one that's available. I don't know. I just didn't.
Oh, okay.
So, it's just amazing, and it's absolutely incredible to me at how many people can be so completely oblivious about not just reality, but it's like when something happens to someone that you care about or that you know, and your immediate response is not to obviously console the family, obviously grieve yourself, but after that is to go and research and try to understand why, or at least educate yourself on the why as much as you can.
I just
can't fathom that. I can't fathom how many people are so fucking arrogant that they just walk around with this belief that their oversimplified view of goddamn fucking reality, you know, is, you know, must answer and solve every single little problem, conundrum, and issue in their entire fucking life. You know, it is incredible to me that people, you know, just kind of waltz around life like, well, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Let me pick the easiest explanation, you know, that, you know, requires me to answer or ask absolutely no more questions and understand absolutely no more information. You know, let me just do that. And, you know, then I'll go on about my life. And, by the way, I'm just sort of perpetuating the problem because I'm also someone who's engaging in victim blaming. You know,
you end up with people who feel uncomfortable with any sort of explanation other than that. And so in order to make themselves feel better and to be able to get up and go to work without freaking out, you say things like, well, that person was just a coward. Right? And so then you don't have to think about maybe your own issues or other people in your life that may be having serious problems and you're just hoping they're okay. I mean, it's easy to just label somebody and move on. It's easier.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I would never do that. Never fucking kill myself. You know, shut the fuck up, you condescending asshole. Like, this is not about you. This is the problem is that, you know, people try to make everything about them, you know, themselves, instead of trying to understand what, you know, this other person went through that led them to that point. And because there could be somebody, you know, 2, 3, 4, 10, 20 years down the road who's going through the exact same thing, and this person would have absolutely no understanding. Excuse me. No capacity, no information to be able to actually try to help them or even direct them to somewhere where they could receive help. I mean, you know what? And that actually brings up another thing. Interestingly, last week, a young musician in this community committed suicide. I didn't know him. I know his sister sort of indirectly, or friends on Facebook, and right after it happened, I kind of reached out to her and was like, sorry for what you're going through. And, you know, but we were talking the other day and she tells me that, and she's Christian, she's a very strong believer. She tells me that a woman, who knew her brother said that, you know, he was struggling with his faith. Almost as a fucking implication, or almost to imply, that that's why he committed suicide. The arrogance that is associated with that kind of thought process, that comes with that kind of thought process, is maddening. It is truly, truly maddening. And even if you believed that, sincerely, deeply believe that, why in the fuck would you say that?
That what? He was struggling with his faith and therefore that was why?
Yes, yes. Like, why would you say that? Like, if I were a Christian and even if I knew that, or even if I had witnessed that or had seen that, I would never have gone to, you know, his family members years after he committed suicide and said, you know, he was struggling with his faith, and I think that that might be a good reason for why he ended up committing suicide. Who the fuck says that kind of shit? I'm at a loss for words, like, because I don't know. Yeah, even when I was a Christian, like, when
people
I was a Christian,
people try to explain stuff. They want an easy explanation. And maybe they thought that the struggle that he was going through about that was painful, because as we both know, some people do go through terribly painful struggles, especially losing faith. And it makes them feel hopeless for a while. I mean, that can happen. Sure it can. If you feel like there's somebody looking out for you, and then you realize that there's nobody there, it's just you, that can cause people a lot of anguish. So I think for the same reason that people say horrible things when someone dies of anything, because they don't know what to say, and because they want an explanation, and they are hoping to be able to say something relevant, and mostly they fail on those counts, especially when they're trying really hard on the third.
You know what? I was a better Christian than that when I was a Christian, and I think part of me still is. I would just like to say that.
I don't know what you're talking about, but go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, no. I mean, I never would have said that to someone when I was a Christian. Never. Never would have come out of my mouth, and I wouldn't say it to anyone now. You know, because such a statement is preposterous. So what I was saying was that, you know, I was a better Christian than that woman who said this to the girl whose brother committed suicide several years ago, a couple of years ago. And, you know, I was a better Christian than her when I was a Christian, and, you know, I sort of still, in certain parts, am, you know, because I, and even going into that, going into the idea, I mean, Christianity is such a weird view of suicide that it's not at all supported by anything in the Bible. It's not supported by a single verse, single scripture anywhere in the Bible. And the best that I've ever heard anyone come, you know, or anyone argue is, you know, sort of St. Augustine, you know, they're using the same 5th century St. Augustine argument about how, you know, thou shalt not kill is one of the 10 commandments. Ergo, it is a mortal sin, and it is something that is, you know, cannot be forgiven, because it's sort of a finale, right? Like, it's the final sin that you commit.
Right.
Of course, which is kind of absurd. I mean, if I'm jumping off of a building and I scream "God damn" the entire way down, you know, then technically my last sin broke a 10 commandments. Not to make light of this. I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, that exact same argument could be applied to just about any of the 10 commandments. Well, at least the first four. I mean, obviously, none of the commandments are necessarily greater than any of the rest. You know, but there's a very clear distinction here, because there are justifiable reasons. There are justifiable reasons in the Bible to kill and to murder people. There just are. I didn't write the thing. You know, so it's not as though it's an absolute sort of argument, but even so, it's completely and totally ridiculous, because it assumes that, you know, the entire part or aspect of, you know, someone being saved can be summed up in the very last thing that they do in the very last moment of their life. You know, if that's the case, then what is the point in being saved? Sort of makes Christianity, you know, at least slightly kind of internally contradictory. Not that it's not already, in my opinion. But that part in particular makes me actually wonder, like, what is the point of being saved if there's a way that you could be kind of unsaved? You know what I mean?
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I mean, nobody's ever saying, "I'm saved, and so therefore I can go out and break all of these commandments and not ask for forgiveness or not repent or whatever." But I think they're throwing it in with everything else that's naughty, because they want, you know, they would like, churches, the institutions would like to have a deterrent in place for people doing that. And so they think maybe they can, I can't imagine that would stop anybody. It would just make you feel worse, wouldn't it? That you were thinking about it and considering it, then you just feel dirtier and more full of shame, because it wasn't just a painful thing you were going through, but also it's naughty.
Yeah, right. You know? But my point is, and I think it's gotten lost I'm sort of all over the place. Sorry, I didn't have an outline for tonight. My point is that if sin is the worst thing that, you know, if man sinning is the worst thing that man can do to God, then by man removing himself from the equation of sin, he's technically doing God a favor.
I see.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a smartass, but that's how that logic works. That's the only way that logic works. But the Donatists, so early Christian group called the Donatists, they were actually pro-suicide, and they believe that, excuse me, they believe that by killing themselves, they could become martyrs and then they could end up going to heaven, you know, sort of like in the same form as Jesus. And, you know, sort of the early, you know, early theologians in the Catholic Church, you know, sort of considered suicide as, that's where the whole, like, it's a mortal sin and it's something that the Protestants sort of took over. And of course, it came over here to America. It's still very prominent in Europe. And that's one of the main reasons why people have this view of suicide that they do is from religion. And I don't think that in particular Christianity, and I don't think Christianity gets as much of the credit for the amount of victim blaming that goes on, you know, inside of Western culture, specifically when it comes to suicide. So, and they should. They actually deserve a great deal of blame. And they deserve a great deal of blame for how human beings demonize people who are so exhausted that they feel the need to take their own lives. And I think that that's completely reprehensible.
It is. My classmates in Catholic school who killed themselves didn't get memorials in the yearbook because they don't want to encourage that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when, well, I told you that story, but yeah, it was only after a large sort of donation to the Catholic Church, to the church, did Sandy actually get a funeral. So, you know, it is preposterous. People don't, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up because I've said that to a number of people and they thought that I was bullshitting them. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. That is literally what fucking happened. I mean, you know, you had like Sandy's poor mother, you know, begging the fucking priest for a funeral.
Nobody listening knows who that is, probably, Jared.
Yeah, it was. I've dealt with suicide. I've talked about it a couple times on the show. I've dealt with suicide before. It was an ex-girlfriend of mine who committed suicide. You know, and her parents were fairly wealthy, and we were Catholic, and anyway. So they could probably put the rest of that story together. Having said all that,
there were some other things you wanted to cover. Victim blaming, you've gotten to that.
There were. I just, yeah. I really wasn't going to do the show tonight, you know. I was like, no, I cannot. I told Darby that. I would do the show this week, and I've had a couple of people ask me if we're going to have the show that, you know, tonight. So, you know, given everything that's happened, I'm not mad. Like it would be weird to be, you know, mad at Scott. I mean, there's nothing to do with me, but no, I am, you know, sad. I mean, he left behind a daughter and, you know, left behind a young daughter. And not that if he left behind an old daughter, it would be any different. You know, but he left behind family members who, good people who care and love him. Left behind friends and, you know, I mean.
So it's the thing that we don't handle it very well, and I don't mean just we don't deal with the grief of it. I mean, we don't talk about it very effectively. We don't talk about it as much as we should. We don't have a very good system in place for dealing with, you know, people who are at risk for suicide. I mean, the last year, you probably looked this up, the last year we have stats for from the CDC, suicide is the second leading cause of death for kids. I mean,
yes,
from, you know, to up to college age, and the third for a lot of groups, middle-aged people after cancer, heart and heart disease. The third one, you're likely to die of a suicide. There are 42,000 something like that people committed suicide last year in the country. We don't really talk about it that much. There's no ribbon, you know, and there, sure, there are resources available, but we're kind of, we have this sort of shame thing going on about it and distaste for it, which is just disgusting. I find that really upsetting, the same way that people have distaste for speaking openly about health matters or about sexual education or whatever. It's like, you know, having it, the fact that it makes you uncomfortable doesn't make it any less necessary to talk about, and it doesn't make it go away. So, and why don't you just forget about your own discomfort for a minute, because it's not really relevant. The larger issues that actually affect people's lives permanently, sometimes in all cases that I just brought up, it's better to have a structure in place to talk about this stuff and to address it and to help people who need help. But we kind of shy away from this stuff, and there's a lot of sort of shaming and blaming and sort of endless futile, you know, running around in circles trying to figure out why would it, you know, it's like, is that going to help you? Is that going to help the next person?
I think one of the things people don't understand is that whenever you promote this idea that, you know, suicide is, you know, a simple form of weakness or, you know, a matter of selfishness, you know, what you're actually doing is that you're convincing people to never come to you with their problems, to never rely on you for any kind of help, to never, you know, to not be able to trust you, that, hey, I can't confide in this person because of what I've heard them say or promote, you know, and they'll think that I'm weak or that I'm pathetic or that
help.
I'm selfish. That's right.
Yep. You better not. You can't ask for help because you'll be labeled a coward or a selfish coward, and more shame will be heaped on you, which is probably the very last thing you need if you are, you know, struggling with this suicidal ideation.
That's right. You know what that's right. You know what it is? They want a national suicide prevention line to exist. They don't want to live in a society where people actually call it.
Yeah. Or, you know, they want to be able to corral everybody into one category. You know, the only people that do that are A, B, and C. The only people that do that are desperate drug addicts. The only people that do that are whatever. Whatever you put at the end of that sentence is going to be false. I had a coworker that was just one of the most friendly, cheerful people I mean, she's the kind of person that would, like, grab you by the arm every time she says hello to you, you know? She had a kid my age, really nice kid, that she loved, and she had a husband that she loved. And she was hospitalized for depression several times. The last time they let her out, they weren't quite sure about letting her out. She really wanted to go home and see her family. And she wasn't to be left alone, but she managed to sneak out. And that was the end of her. And sort of like you said at the beginning, there's no, you can't line people up in a room and pick out those suicidal ones. You have no idea what kind of pain people are in. So you just you can't know. And making them feel ashamed of that pain is not, I don't understand what that does, except for making the shamer feel superior.
Well, and there's a flip side to the argument about shaming them. The flip side of that is that whenever you assert that a suicide victim is selfish, now you're making it also, in sort of an indirect way, you're making it the fault of the close friends and family members, or asserting that it's also their fault because, you know, they weren't there to curb this selfishness. They weren't there to help them power through this problem, you know? And I mean,
right.
This ends up creating a great deal of, you know, sort of internal resentment. I mean, fuck, I went through 10 years after Sandy committed suicide, like 10 years of blaming myself, until I finally realized that there was nothing I could have done. I was a 15-year-old kid, you know, that there was nothing I could have done, and it wasn't my fault. And I, you know, but it took me that long to figure that out and to understand that. And, you know, a lot of, you know, there are some other things kind of associated with that, but, you know, but a lot of it does come down to the fact that whenever you say that, well, they should just be able to get over it. Now that convinces the family members that they should have been able to do something to help them get over it. You know, that they didn't do enough, that they, you know, these one or two little small things that they didn't do, you know, were enough to send this person over the edge. Had they just answered the phone, had they just called them back, had they just sent them money, had they just been there for them a few more moments, you know, I mean, this creates a huge and ridiculous fucking burden on, you know, on family members. And it is all sourced from the exact same misconception, you know, that exact same victim blaming fucking mentality. I mean,
I agree. I think it's weird because it's a thing that may bring sort of temporary superficial comfort to the person who's being smug and condescending. But it damages everybody else. The people that love them, the people's memory of their loved one, everybody who's related and trying to help the people who are grieving the hardest. It damages everybody. And there's like a blast zone. And
Yeah. Yeah, that's
we're really good actually at trivializing other people's pain, because see, if it's not your suffering, it must not be so bad. People did that a lot. I noticed after Robin Williams died, the first thing I thought when he died was, I wonder how many times he climbed off that chair. Probably a lot. You know what I mean? Over the years.
Yeah.
And it's really strange to me to hear people say, oh, rich white man, oh my God, really? People suffer, human beings suffer. And you can't qualify or quantify someone else's suffering. A lot of people can barely qualify their own, you know?
Yeah, let alone someone else.
Yeah, and it's really weird that people are so easily dismiss other people's pain, or they assume, well, I got over this. I hear this from people all the time, actually. Like, I talked myself out of my whatever problem, or I just pulled myself up by my bootstraps and I quit whatever, gambling, you know? I mean, it's really easy to say, well, I did this, and so you should be able to do it because your shit is exactly the same as mine and the circumstances are the same. And besides, just... You really have no idea. This is the thing. When it comes to someone else's life, inside what it's like to live their life, you don't know.
Yeah, they always tell you about the things that they succeeded at overcoming, but notice that you never hear the things that they failed at overcoming.
Yeah, they leave those out.
course they do. I mean, we all selectively do that. You know, we all like to talk only good things about ourselves. You know, nobody ever likes to talk about the bad shit about themselves. So, anyway, we've just blown through an hour. Literally, we have like 4 minutes left.
Give the number again.
Do what? What number?
Give the number again. The suicide hotline number.
Oh, yeah, yeah. National Suicide Prevention Line is 1-800-273-8255. By the way, I like living in a society where that number exists and people do call it when they need to use it. So, anyway.
I'd like to live in one where people didn't feel ashamed that they had to.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Thank you, Darby.
Thank you. I'm sorry about your
phone. All right. Yeah, me too. Me too. He was a dick, but yeah. We had a lot of good times together.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
You've been listening to LogicCast. We're a weekly podcast. Airs every Thursday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LogicCast or blogtalkradio.com/LogicCast. Once again, the number for the National Suicide Prevention Line is 1-800-273-8255. Please understand that there is no shame in calling that number if you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts. We will be on next week, and we do apologize for the unfortunate last 2 weeks. Work requirements kept me out of pocket, and we didn't want to come on with sort of a half-cocked show. So I guess next week. Hey, Darby, let's can we take a shit on, you know what would make me feel a lot better if we could just take a shit on the upcoming crazy Republican candidates for president? Can we do that?
Sure. I'd love that. That'd be so much fun. Right. Do I get Ben Carson? Because I'd enjoy that.
I tell you what, you can take Ben, I'll take Mike Huckabee, and that would actually make me feel a lot better. Anyway.
I can't take Mike Huckabee. I don't live in Bubbaville. You're the only one that's qualified to say.
Thank you. Thank you. We don't call it that down here, by the way. I just wanted to clear
that's
up
what
any
he calls
sort of,
it.
Listen, I don't give a shit what he calls it.
Oh, well, that's I brought it up. I don't call it that either, but that's what he calls it. So.
He also believes that homosexuality is a sin, and, you know, strangely, gluttony is not. So, anyway, okay. Yes, you've been listening to LogicCast. We'll be on next Thursday night, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. My lovely co-host, Darby Macy. Darby, it is always a pleasure. Toodles. And,
right.
Yeah, okay, 90 seconds. Got to play us out. See you, Darb.
Bye.